Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Sunday for Sunday, April 28th, 2024. We've got another great show for you this week. We've got the Legal Eagles, David Levine and Kevin Walsh, in segment one, breaking down the latest news in regulation and litigation and a lot more. And then in the second segment, we'll be taking a look back at last Monday's show with Andy Langford of Cruz Bereavement Support. So sit back, relax, enjoy this episode of BRN Sunday. Well, we're going to kick off the week as we always do. I should say show as we always do. Joining us on the line, they are the Legal Eagles. They're back together again. David Levine, Kevin Walsh are both principals with Groom Law Group. That's an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. Eagles, welcome back to the program this week.
Jeff, as always, it is great to be here, especially on a week with a lot of news. And we look forward to sharing with you and the listeners a good bit this morning.
Yeah. And Kevin, I want to come to you. I think we're going to kind of pick up on the conversation from last week. And I know people may inquire about your voice. I think you were just so excited about this new fiduciary rule that you were yelling out into the heavens and you strained your voice.
Yeah, rarely is there a rule package there or something in the ERISA world that comes out and that really has me, you know, upping the volume level the way that this package did. And what happened is on Thursday, the Department of Labor published in the Federal Register its final rules redefining when someone is an investment advice fiduciary. And why is this a big deal? It's a big deal because that dictates when ERISA's rules apply, as opposed to having a financial intermediary, financial institution, or you know, a broker or someone subject to only a different care standard, like an NAIC care standard or regulation best interest. In the final package, in the retail space, so when you're talking to individuals, when you're recommending that folks roll out of a retirement plan into an IRA, or when you recommend how someone invests in an IRA, the department has decided or has issued a rule that says essentially you're going to be a fiduciary if you're a financial professional. There's a little bit more nuance to the test, but in general, if you hold yourself out as a financial professional who has a care standard that they owe towards the individual, the department has a rule that generally seeks to make those individuals fiduciaries.
And Kevin, if I could just, I don't want you to strain your voice, but I want to be very targeted with a few questions to you to make it easy, because I know how excited you are. Let's talk about the effective date, because a lot of people listening to the program, whether they're plan sponsors, whether they're advisors and fiduciaries, or they're just consumers, what's the effective date, the stated effective date of this new rule?
The effective date for determining if you're a fiduciary or not is September 23rd, 2024. Mm-hmm. Now, the department also made changes around the exemptions that apply. So if you want to get paid based on advice you give, you need to comply with an exemption. Those exemptions don't fully kick in until the end of September 2025. So there is going to be a period where, you know, there's kind of transitional exemptions that require compliance with a duty of care, a duty of loyalty, and a fiduciary acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. But this new definition does kick in later this year.
Yeah. And David, I want to bring you in here to get kind of gauge reaction. We missed you last week. I know you had some other things going on, but what has been the general reaction? I guess let's start with the industry. And by the industry, I mean the retirement industry, service providers, all those people that are lumped into, you know, provide services to individual retirees or participants, but also and employees, but also maybe record keepers and others.
Sure. And Jeff, as always in the retirement industry, there is no one response. I think there are significant portions of the industry that have, to use the word significant again, significant concerns with how the final rule is structured. There are some folks who are like a little more positive on it. There's a smaller group that's completely positive, not that big a group. Mm-hmm. There are obviously, to talk about stakeholders, there are consumer advocates that are very positive on this rule. Like if you look at the Friday Washington Post, for example, there was a whole column on why this is good. I think plan sponsors at this point, right now, throughout this process, even though this rule is about them and the plan fiduciaries and their participants, they haven't necessarily been the center of it, because a lot of this is how the plumbing of the retirement industry works. And I think now they're going to start to engage and see how this impacts them. And this is part of the discussion, because a number in certain areas, such as like annuities, there is concern from a number of folks in the annuity space that these changes will impact the quality or amount of advice or services that are available to folks. And this is what was brought up in the prior fiduciary rule. And as a result, sponsors are going to have to wait and see a little bit. But I can come back and talk a little bit about where do sponsors go from here in a minute.
Yeah, I was going to just, if I could, just follow up. So Kevin mentioned to us that the effective date is September 23rd, 2024, or one of the effective dates. What can we expect between now and then? Let's start there. So I know it had been intimated that there may be quote unquote legal challenges. But what can we expect to happen between now and then? And then I think you can kind of dovetail into what sponsors, plan sponsors are could or should be thinking about doing.
Sure. And the beginning answer is yes, there will likely be legal challenges that any moment now that are in the offing. That's number one. Number two, there's going to be different approaches. Some service providers may take the position that they want to see where the legal challenges end, although the compliance date, even though it's out in September for this rule kicking in, that's not too far away. So I think what you will see is people will be balancing the will this go away in court versus will it go live. See, I think we're already seeing and already hearing from people of, well, how do I implement this or be balanced or ready to implement it? Like practical implementation steps. What does this mean for my business? What does this mean in the, I'll call it the sales process? What does it mean in working with people in the sales channel? Because it's not just a provider automatically just going to a plan sponsor or plan fiduciary. There's often many different layers of people involved there doing many different important things, whether it's educating on investments or other things. So there's a lot that people will be working through. Similarly, eventually, if the rule stays intact and goes as is, you'll see paperwork changes, you'll see disclosure changes. You might see, and you might, just as people opposed to the rule have said, see some material changes in service offerings and service rules. There's things, for instance, the last thing I'll mention really quickly on this is the, for instance, the rule is pretty blunt in that you can't just use a disclaimer to disclaim that you're a fiduciary, but it says it can be part, you can have things like that as part of the process. So you'll see a reworking of a lot of things. If you're a sponsor, the way I close this out is if you're a sponsor at this point, you can start asking questions, but don't expect answers today. Your providers, I would expect that maybe in meetings in late summer for maybe like after Q2, you might start hearing things, and they'll probably say they're working on it before then. But think about what does it mean? And when things come in, I know with plan sponsors, a lot of the questions that we expect to get will be asking, what does this mean? How do I address this? What do these contract changes mean? So there's going to be a lot to do potentially, but we have to see where everything goes. My friend Kevin, do you disagree with anything I said? Of course you might, so I defer to you.
I generally agree with what you said. I think of the kind of the near term as, near term, I think we're going to see more sophisticated takes in the final rule of the next week or two. It was in the pre-publication version, it ran hundreds and hundreds of pages. So, while David and I have finished reading it, I'm not sure if everybody else has. Right now we're getting the response of good, bad. Whereas, in a week or two, we might say good, but we've got issues with this section, or bad, but this section could be clarified. So once we get to that point, we may see requests to the department to extend the effective date or for FAQs clearing it up. But I also do agree with David that, in the next, not next weeks, because the next few weeks, folks will begin to develop what they'll get systems in place to start developing compliance. But probably by, the end of Q2, folks will be taking real steps to try to figure out compliance. And for plan sponsors, it may lead to change in the way they interact with plans by, the beginning of Q3.
Last question for you, gentlemen. Obviously there's a lot to come. We don't know. We don't have our crystal balls out. Is this the story for the remainder of the year when it comes to retirement plans? Is this the thing that we're primarily going to be focused on? Just your opinion, knowing there's an election in November.
I'll go there, Jeff.
Okay.
And Kevin and I have not discussed this. We may disagree, and that's
Okay.
great.
And that's good.
I think I'm not sure it will be the story. There's other guidance as we're approaching the end of the Biden administration term. They're working to get things out. Litigation is still there. I'm not sure we'll get much legislation. So this will be a big story, but will it be the only story? Probably not. It's hard. I think it'll be the big one, but there'll be lots of others. Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think from like a regulatory standpoint or a legislative standpoint, that this is going to get most of the oxygen. I think Congress will focus on this rule at some point this summer or early fall. I think there will be litigation, and that's all going to attract a lot of attention. Plus, compliance with this, it is a big change for the retirement industry. That being said, David highlighted, Secure 2.0 implementation is coming in. There's a whole lot of developments in the 401k space. There's just a bunch of other things now going on in the retirement ecosystem, from annuities to defined benefit plans to alternatives to 401k plans, that I think fiduciary is going to be the elephant in the room, but it won't be the whole room.
Well, folks, you can tune in right here every week to hear what the legals have to say, legal eagles have to say, and they're the inside baseball. They got the inside baseball. Gentlemen, David, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin, make sure you take some Ricola. They're not a sponsor, but that tends to work for me, and get some tea and honey, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks for having fun, Jeff, and thank you, listeners.
Bye-bye, gentlemen. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Welcome back. And now we're going to look back at a show from Monday on BRN AM. Annie Langford of Cruise Bereavement Support joined us to discuss and understand the five stages of grief. Let's give that one a listen.
And joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Andy Langford is the clinical director at the Cruise Bereavement Support. Andy, it's so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey. It's a real pleasure to be here.
And I should say it's the morning here in the US, the afternoon in the UK in West London. Andy, I want to start with some basics. Before we get into the five stages of grief, what is grief? How would you describe grief to, we all experience it, but how do you define grief?
Yeah, absolutely. Often people find it hard to define. The reason is because It's so unique. So we will all experience grief differently. And upon each significant loss, whether that's the loss of a person who's close to us, or whether that could be other significant losses, like loss of a job or home, for instance, we'll have different experiences of those, and they will also vary over time. Grief broadly is the experience that we have as a result of having a significant loss, and it's usually associated with death. And that experience can affect us, or it can incorporate our emotional side, so what we feel. It includes our thoughts and how we think. It also includes our physicality. So grief has a profound effect on our bodies in a number of ways.
Yeah.
It also includes how we behave. And lastly, I would say, it can also include what life means to us. And for those of us who have a faith, it can also have an influence on how we perceive the world in terms of our faith too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those emotions that I think we all have dealt with. You mentioned job loss, you mentioned death. Some of those things are so final and so transitional, really hard to argue with it, but there is a real sense of loss. Andy, you mentioned that there can be different timelines associated with grief. Can you share, you know, for someone maybe who hasn't had the grief emotion for a long time, What's the timeline typically for grief?
Sure, it's a really good question. And we're often asked this at Prues. And usually it's by people who are trying to support someone who's experienced a death. And it's with a good heart. Broadly, what we say and what the research tells us is that there is no set timeline for grief. So we may experience quite acute feelings around the death of someone close, for instance, quite soon after the death. For some of us, though, we might feel quite numb because it might be a shock. It might be something we can't fully process because we're busy with other things like sorting out finances, you know, a house, childcare, for instance, if the death has been a death of a partner. So because each experience is unique, then the times at which we have those different emotions and thoughts and feelings in our bodies, they differ too. But the other thing I would add as well is that we know that the grief we experience, it can be triggered at other times in our lives. So, you know, you might have experienced the death of someone close a couple of years ago, but then actually something today, walking down the street, or on transport, or you know, something you might smell or see or hear, something you might taste, actually it reminds you of the person who's died. And some of those experiences come flooding back. So There's no set time in terms of how we experience grief.
Yeah, you bring up the sense of smell or just a recollection. And I actually personally have gone through that where I recollect a loved one or even a close friend. And you're right, it does trigger those emotions. How do you recognize, so if you're a caregiver or a family member, and maybe it's not, or an extended family member, can you recognize the signs of grief in someone who is grieving? If you don't know, for example, that they lost a job, lost a loved one, or they're experiencing, you know, total emotional distress, can you externally look at somebody and determine if they're grieving?
Sure. So I'd actually, or we at Cruise would actually frame it in a slightly different way.
Sure.
So you're more likely to be able to recognize what's going on for someone if you're in relationship with them. Now, that relationship obviously varies. So the relationship I have with my nearest and dearest is very different than the relationship I've got with the person behind the counter at our local corner shop and supermarket, right? But it can still be a compassionate relationship. You know, you can still say hi to people. You can still behave in a compassionate and loving way, right? You can still be open to a conversation. And it's at those contact points when you might be able to detect there's something different. And it's then about asking what's going on for you. Jeffrey, how are you doing today? You know, communicating that you're there to listen and be available. is just so, so important. Because actually, as we know, if we're all experiencing loss and grief differently, then a loss that you experience, it might be something that you feel actually at that time you're okay to cope with, and so it might not be so obvious. But actually, I might experience the same loss, but be processed it very differently. It might profoundly affect me at that point in time, and it's very, very clear that I am affected by it. Both of us may need support at different times, and the support we need might be different. So you know, one of the best things we would say is actually, as an individual, be open and prepared to have a conversation and communicate that you're there for someone if they need you.
Well, that was certainly a very powerful program, and you never know how each individual is going to process their grief, and you know, just being understanding as a caretaker, a caregiver, I should say, a family member, or just a friend, so important. We look forward to having Andy back on the program again very soon. And that wraps up this episode of BRN Sunday. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest and another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.